All right, my brother Ed is on the show today. Y'all know I'm not real big on intros. I like stories, so I'll tell you a story about when I met Ed. Ed, was it like 4 years ago, you think? Probably. So, yeah, Clint Webb, one of my buddies. I'm a health, more in the health coaching arena at the time. He goes, hey, we want to do this men's mental health type of deal. We want you to come in. And I'm thinking, man, I'm going to help these poor bastards that have mental health issues. And I'm going to fix them all with nutrition. Because at the time I thought mental health issues were a nutritional deficiency. And I also have to say that a couple weeks into the mental journey, I, for the first time, saw my trauma and started working on my stuff because a guy pulled me aside and told me, you know, basically the way I've been answering some questions, it let him know that I had trauma. And here I am now, have worked on this stuff, have transformed myself, and trying to share this with other people. We're on a podcast talking about mental health. So, Ed, I have you to think about that. And I'm curious, how do you remember it?
So I can tell you how I remember. So I used to run my own networking group called We Are Connected. And Clint and I have been connected on LinkedIn for a while, but we've never physically met. And he comes to one of the meetings. He's like, hey, I've been wanting to meet with you. Let's carve some time out. So a couple of weeks later or so, we sit down and we start talking. And I just start sharing with him, you know, who I am and some things like that. And we get into marriage, talking about marriage. And I start sharing some things that we did in marriage. And he's like, oh, there's something there. He said, you and your wife need to do something, you know, about that. I said, hell no. I ain't doing nothing else with her again. I'm good. I do the work day to day with her. I'm home with her. I'm good. I don't need to do anything else. So we start laughing and we continue to talk. And then we started talking about, you know, how most men are just closed. They don't have an open environment to just be themselves and let whatever is going on inside with them out. So he said, look, I got a buddy. We need to bring him in. I said, all right. And he said, his name is Mitch Webb. I'm like, is that your brother? He said, no, we ain't even related. But it was funny. So we brought, you know, Mitch in and we sat down. It was literally downtown Raleigh. I sat downtown Raleigh and talked about it. He said, yeah, we know some guys that'll come. And it literally started from there. And the crazy thing is when I was really active, you know, we would do it no matter how show that. There was one time it was just me and a good friend, Josh, just sitting there talking, deep conversation. Then it got to a point where we had about 30-something guys in that room over at the cigar spot. And I was like, that's too many to have in a space. Like, we can't get to everybody. So that's how the journey started. And I share stories from that often. And there's two individuals that stick out to me the most. So we were having one of our early sessions, and I invited a gentleman, and he was like, no, I'm not going to come. He said, I've been a part of stuff like that before. It just never worked out. I kept pushing on him. It's like, just come, like, it's different. So we had started already, and here he comes, and like, but he sat down on his couch, and Clint was there. I think it was about six of us. And when he sat down, he said, we all stopped, but we were like, yo, you good? He said, yeah, I feel like I'm supposed to be here. You remember that? And it was great.
Great, right?
How we did things is, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing? 10, I'm absolutely fabulous. It doesn't get any better than that. And 1, I'm ready to give up my life. So when it was time for him to speak, he said he was a 4. And, you know, we started asking some probing questions and like, what's going on? And he opened up and said, you know, because of a disagreement or something that he had spoke to his mother in years, like 10 years, but something crazy like that. And then we all started asking just some questions and things like that. I personally feel that it made him think, like, yeah, that's not good. He comes back the next meeting, and I don't remember what number, but it was like an 8 or 10, something crazy like that. And we all looked at him like, well, what happened? Like, you were here. And you're here like, what? He's like, I talked to my mom for the first time, and I talked to her on Mother's Day. You had a bunch of men in there doing like this, and it was a pollen in the air. And But it was so deep and rich. And I'm sitting there, my eyes are watering. I'm like, wow, that's powerful. But the amazing part is he went to go see her. That's I think it was that same year. Went to go see her for the first time in years. So that was just amazing. That let me know that we're doing something right. Another time, and I know you remember this, we started doing our meetings at a place in Durham called Sticks and Vines. And he doesn't mind me sharing his name, but Kevin MacIver. He came to the meeting for the first time. And he listened to everyone go around the room, and it got to him, and his eyes are already warming up. And he says, you know, I've never had a space like this before. And he started sharing how he came up, and he got out of the street life, and most of his acquaintances is for back home are still in that life. And, you know, he went on to college, and he's doing well. But he said to see men of different nationalities and races all still having the exact same problem. This man started crying. He had everybody in the room eyes all water. I love Kevin, and I hate him because every time he starts to get deep, he's got everybody's eyes start to water again. it was just good to see men coming together to just help each other. We did have a therapist on one time, and he just tried to therapy people too much. And that just wasn't a good fit right there. But just guys just talking, not having the answers, but just sharing. You know, hey, man, I've been through this. I've been through a divorce, and I've been through this. I've been through loss. And it was just an amazing space to be a part of. And, you know, crazy thing is we set up a WhatsApp chat, and you don't know what's going to happen in that chat sometimes. It's crazy. But it's an amazing group. And I got so many messages on LinkedIn when I was sharing stuff about the group. Like, what is this? And people to this day still ask me, like, is it still going on? I'm like, yeah, it's still going on. I'm like, it'll go on with two guys. It'll go on with 100 guys. And, you know, but yeah, that's the genesis of, you know, Men on a Journey. And, you know, Mitch is, you know, I dropped the baton a little bit because I got super busy on certain things, but Mitch just picked it up. He was running like the guy from Usain Bolt with his little short legs. You should have seen him just running. And that's how it is, men on a journey. And it doesn't stop.
Yeah, man, it's a special group, and it's I appreciate you sharing all that. You know, it's so needed in a time when I'm recognizing that a society just really puts men in a box, especially the word masculine. You know, it's only defined by one or two emotions, and not sharing the others. And keeping all that stuff bottled up, you know, what I know is that leads to disease. You know, we hear the body keeps the score. That's the book I was reading when I came in and shared. And
he's actually gonna be in town in a couple of weeks. I'll say I think it's October, November. I'll send you the information because I'm trying to go see him live. He's gonna be in Raleigh.
So yeah, that's awesome. But it's the body keeps the score. I mean, it's so explanatory, just the title, but the body, when we don't share this stuff in a safe place and it's not validated and allowed, maybe it was punished when we were a kid. We hold all that stuff in, it's separating, it's dismissing parts of ourselves. And so now we have all these, what we would call, you know, ruptures and this disconnection from ourself. And what feels it are these patterns, coping mechanisms, behaviors, that this trauma is dictating how we show up. And we can't see that until we're ready. And it's always good to have another group around. And what I have seen in the group is, yeah, people bring some heavy stuff to the group. We all know that it's a safe place to share. And what's interesting is guys come in with like tunnel vision and they don't see any options. It's like, man, this leads to death. You know, and you see them share that and you see that deep breath that Ed describes and they look around and people aren't freaking out. They're holding it. They're saying, we kind of have that intention that this guy has everything that he needs and we're not here to fix him or change him or tell him what to do. But people that have experienced what they've experienced, we encourage them to share if this person sharing wants that. We certainly have our boundaries and things like that. But what I see is, you know, this deep side that comes from, you know, putting down this load that we've been carrying, you know, realizing
we've been told. Right. We've been told as men, young men and adults, we really don't want to hear how you really feel. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be strong.
Yeah.
You're supposed to keep internalize everything. And that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
The analogy I use is we all have seen a Coke bottle just shaking. Now imagine that bottle just being shaken every day for years.
Yeah.
When that cap comes off, it's spraying everywhere. Mm-hmm. And most of the times it's unhealthy ways. No, alcohol, you know, some drugs and, you know, PTSD that they buried up before and never got help for. Just a lot of different things come out. But it's important that, you know, we find a space that we feel comfortable and allowed to be vulnerable.
Yep.
And a lot of men aren't allowed to be vulnerable at home. And that's the part that, for me, I found out over time. A lot of men said this, and I'm like, wow, you figure that, you know, with your significant other, that you should be able to be vulnerable. But I've had some individuals share with me, I can't. I'm like, why? They said, because in the past, I've done that with a significant other, and they used it against me in a disagreement or something like that. And I have one guy on Facebook, he said, I'll never, ever tell a partner again. I don't really feel it. Wow.
Yeah, guys are caring a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and also it makes me think, I caught the men on a journey effect, and it's, you see those threes and fours walking in, you know, to kind of let you guys know again, we asked the guys on a scale of 1 to 10, how you doing, you know, and you see those three or fours walking in. And after a couple of months, I always was amazed to see that number improve. The average of the group goes up, and it's like, we're not diagnosing people. We're not treating people. We're just giving them space. We're letting them breathe. And when we provide that outlet, men thrive on that.
I always use the image. We've all seen that Atlas image where this guy is carrying the weight of the world on his back. And that's what a lot of men are carrying. And when they got into the space, they allowed other men to help carry it or to just unpack it and leave it somewhere. That is amazing. I'm also, if you remember that one gentleman that drove almost 2 hours to the group, that gentleman got there and we were meeting like an hour or two, depending on how many people were there. He took up probably an hour and a half and he just exploded all of everybody. No one else had, but he needed to get that out. And he said, I'll probably never come again, but I needed this. I was like,
okay. I love that. And I don't know if your example is Brandon, but there was Brandon came in. I don't remember what he was dealing with, but it was significant. And it was like, he was the tunnel vision I'm thinking about. Shout out to Brandon if he's listening. And he didn't have any options, but once he laid it out on the table, you know, I see this kind of picture of him hiding, you know. But it's like he's slowly starting to look up because this guy's going, oh, look, everybody's asking questions to kind of see. I mean, as men, we're good at finding solutions. If someone's up to that, open to being given some of that, get some feedback, then it can be really helpful. By the end of the deal of the meeting, he had an idea. He had a game plan, something to try that kind of took this ball of yarn and slowly, one at a time, pulled one thing out, gave him some direction, and I think he was able to resolve the situation in a really good way. But that's another example of coming in and getting some feedback from someone that's been in your shoes and then leaving with, you know, that number. That's the inverse. I mean, you can even come in at a 4 and leave at an 8 when you've got a big problem like that. And that was really cool to see.
You realize that you're not alone. That's the biggest thing. Like, you're not alone. We all go through things. We might go through a little differently. We all go through it. And hey, I might be going through a divorce or been through a divorce and you're going through right now. Like, hey, I got through it. I sat in my bed, you know, with the colors over my head and, you know, but guess what? I'm on the other side of it. So men are not meant to just walk alone.
Mm-mm. But we end up doing that.
It's really meant to be. We're meant to be in relationships with others. with each other. And a lot of men, you know, we have these superficial relationships where we'll talk about sports and some of the other things, but we don't start digging up under that surface. You know, a lot of us don't want to go down there.
Why do you think that is?
One, we've never been allowed this space. If you remember, if you're a little boy and you fall and you brush your knee and it's bleeding, oh, you'll be all right, dust it off. Long go back outside and play.
Rub some dirt on it.
Rub some dirt on it. And but we've never been told, like, a young lady falls, gonna clean it up. We're gonna embrace her. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. So as men get older, in my opinion, they remember that I got hurt. I'm dealing with something, but it's just, you know, I have to deal with it. Or I got to just, you know, bear it and keep it on, which is just so not healthy. And as you alluded to earlier, I mean, it causes so many issues with our body.
Oh, yeah.
You know, prior to reading that book, The Body Keeps Score, I didn't understand a few people in my life. And after reading that book and understanding trauma a little bit more, I was like, wow. I'm like, this is real. Because I have real life examples of people that are in my life that body can score on so much stuff.
Mm-hmm. And if we're not taught at an early age, which we are not, how to work with that stuff and let it out, it's kind of like trying to hold a beach ball underwater your whole life. And eventually, like you said, it's going to erupt. You know, we didn't get taught how to slowly let it out in a contained way, in a safe space over time, so that's no longer in your system. And because of our conditioning to stuff it all down as men, we got a ton of beach balls. And that's where some of the stuff that
we're doing, we're trying to hold them all down.
You're just managing, and that's exhausting. And the coping mechanisms, the identities that we take on to suppress all this stuff, that only lasts us so long until there's an autoimmune flare, there's the chronic anxiety, and then you sit in front of me. And so I'm saying, hey, do this work as soon as you can if this sounds like you.
To plug here, I had never paid attention to the power of grounding. And Mitch was going, yeah, you gotta round yourself. You gotta take off shoes and walk in the dirt and all. I'm like, I get out of here with this stuff. And I tried it. And I was like, oh man, this. And then I started there. I'm like, I haven't walked barefoot, less going to the beach anywhere in years. Years. You know, as kids, we ran through the grass and the mud and all that. And now I try to take time and, you know, put them shoes off and, you know, and put my feet on in some Mother Earth.
What do you notice when you do that?
I instantly start to relax if I'm stressed.
Yep. So what Ed's talking about is grounding, you know, just putting your bare feet on the earth, that the earth puts off a human resonance that our body craves. And when we're around technology, we gather all of these, I can't remember if it's neutrons or protons, but basically, let's just say it's a positive charge that we accumulate in our body. It clogs things up. It causes inflammation. I remember being at a conference and seeing someone who'd been around a lot of technology, like we are right now, and getting their blood under a microscope, and it looked like tomato sauce, very clumpy and thick. And then they showed walking on the ground for 15 minutes, and it was very viscous and flowy and so that accumulation of charge, it builds up in our body. Our bodies are literally batteries that we are energy and amino acids when you break us all the way down. And so our body currents, we don't have circulation. Our brain's not getting blood flow and oxygen. And, you know, we get stagnation in the blood and in the body. And the simple trick, which is so crazy, and that's why I love this type of information, is go out there, you know, right before that. I had a podcast before this. I popped outside, did some Qigong for 5 minutes and did some breathing, had my foot, you know, on the ground and my shirt off in the sun. And it's not like you got to have some big, overt, amazing morning routine. It's just like, man, build this stuff throughout your day. It takes a minute or two. So I'm really glad that you found that. I remember when I found
it.
Yeah, man. And most of the stuff is. Most of the stuff that's going to help your body, it is.
Yeah.
And if you really dive into it, it's a whole nother conversation is why society and lifestyle set up the way that it is. And I think it's to control us and stress us and keep us separate and hating each other so that we can be controlled. So you fight by putting your feet on the ground.
Yeah, man, because that's a whole other conversation. We'll be here all day long.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely have another podcast on that one if you stay tuned to this channel. Ed, I love that you're just a man of service. And I want you to tell us a little bit. You know, we talked about men on a journey, but that ain't all Ed's doing. Ed is a man of service, a man of faith, and he's out there burning his butt up trying to help everybody. And like, tell us a little bit about the nonprofits and then what motivates all this helping work that you're involved in.
Yeah. So I'll start with the second part of the question is, you know, I spent most of my career in financial services, and I was trying to climb the corporate ladder, the stock options and all the things that, you know, says that we're successful in doing. I got burned out with some things. So I did a lot of traveling and things like that. So how I would sum things up to who Ed is right now, I tell everyone my life is built up into two chapters. And that first chapter was all about stuff, you know, senior VP and all this other stuff. And my second half of my life is all about service to humanity. And I always tell people service looks different to everybody else. Service might just be making that right connection to someone that helps you land a job or helps you, you know, find the right doctor. It could be anything. Or it could be you're at the mall, you got an umbrella and it's pouring rainy. There's somebody next to you that does not have, and they're just sitting out there staring at their car. Don't want to run out in the rain and say, hey, come on, I'll walk you to your car. Imagine if we all did that. You know, we talk about random acts of kindness all the time. It's not a lot of, it's not big things, and it really cost us nothing to actually do it. But so what happened is my wife been through multiple levels of trauma around sexual assault and domestic violence. And when I make a long story short, when I met her, she never told me anything. But as our relationships got on, she told me what happened when she was 7, a little longer, told me what happened in her 20s, and then with a previous relationship she shared with me. And I'm like, I'm not with you for your past. I'm with you for our present and our potential, our future. And when we finally got together, I'm like, you can be an at-home mom and just do whatever you want. If you know her, she tried that for 30 days. And it's like, hell no, I can't do this. She's like, I don't see how people do it. She said, no disrespect to them. She said, but this is not for me. And she says, I want to start a business. And I want to start a business helping individuals what I've been through. She's got family members that are very successful business owners. And she's like, I want to make money. And I said, okay, I'm here to support you. Just tell me what you need. So she came to me with the name Shine a Light in Darkness is a biblical reference. Where there is lightness, darkness can't overcome it. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. And she goes back and, you know, the faith is our foundation of everything. And she said she was wrestling with God. Should this be a for-profit or not-profit? She comes back to me and said, it's going to be a non-profit. I'm like, I'm going to do what? Like, why? The whole word is an oxymoron to me. That's how I'm fine at desserts. Non-profit. Like, we're going to do that. It's called money and non-profit. That I'm going to help. So, okay. So we went on this journey. I'm way behind the scenes and she's doing most of the work. But 2015, we were driving from Atlanta to Durham, where my parents had lived for about 30 years for a Labor Day cookout. And on the way back, it's pouring rainy. And I'll never forget, we were hydroplaned on 85 South by a yellow Mercedes compressor. A young girl driving. We went down this embankment. We took out telephone, giant light poles. We had a blackout somewhere because we don't remember how some things happened, but we stopped right before oncoming traffic. Wow. My wife had a lacerated liver. She was dealing with paralysis on one side and she was getting these neck injections to stabilize the vertebrae. And I would tell people that wasn't the worst part. The worst part is all that trauma she experienced early in life and never got help for come exploding out everywhere. And she was trying to do something everything to quiet the noises in her head. So she eventually got healed through a journey. She did a lot of self-healing on her own. She tried, you know, your traditional therapy. That wasn't a good fit for her. So she went down this hill of learning everything trauma related and just started doing the work. So we eventually moved here. We started doing the work here and we started growing because we were 100% volunteer led and run organization until last year. My wife and I were putting about 98% of the funds to serve individuals. And by the way, the nonprofit works with victims and survivors of sexual assault and domestic violence. But a couple of years ago, and I think it was a couple of years ago, my wife says, I'm tired. I need a break. Me, I'm like, take a break. No, you're going to do this. I'm like, no, I'm not. She said, yes, you are. Like she grabbed me by the collar. She didn't physically grab me. She grabbed me. She's like, you're going to help. And I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. It's only about 3 years ago. You know what I'm doing? You're going to learn. I love it. So I went down this journey of drinking from the fire hose, of burning as much as I possibly can, and started doing the work. And the deeper I started getting to the work, the more I started understanding different levels of trauma, the more I started understanding people, the more I started learning how to sit in space and let just people talk without even interjecting. And the amount of people that have been affected by sexual assault and domestic violence are just off the charts, because a lot of people look at statistics. I'm like, we can massage statistics. And statistics are only about the people that have come forth and shared. So my wife never went forth and shared with anyone. No law enforcement, nothing. I have a cousin, and I like telling stories as well. I have a cousin that I grew up with. As we got older, families and stuff, we didn't talk as much. His mother, my aunt, passed. And I go to the funeral, and he's a wreck. Like, he is a wreck. And I try to console him. I'm like, look, here's my phone number. Call me if you need me. So the span of about three weeks, he just called, and he just vomited on me every day. Every day. And I'm just listening. I'm like, I'm here for you. I just want to get it out. I cried and a lot of that stuff. But then he gets to the point and says, I've been talking about myself all these weeks. What are you doing these days? So I share with him what I'm doing with the nonprofit, and he gets quiet. When I share with people what I do most of the time and they get quiet, there's a story behind it. My cousin was this good-looking young man. He was very vain and conceited, couldn't walk past a reflection of him without stopping and making sure everything is right. He was very promiscuous. He had an anger problem. And everybody was like, what's wrong with him? Like, why is he like this? What's wrong with it? We just like, because, you know, I didn't hear the word trauma until I was an adult.
Yeah.
Okay. Mental health, we didn't talk about mental health in our family. And when he got quiet, I'm sitting like, please don't share a story with me, please. And he opened up. He dealt with sexual assault at an early age. Now I understand it. He was crying for help, but didn't know how to explain what had happened to him. And I understood him, like, to this day, I don't let anybody say anything negative about him. Because, like, you don't know what he's been through. And he's like 59. And he shared it with me when he was, what, 53? So he carried all that trauma. So I want to say about 80% of the week I spend working with the nonprofit, leading as a co-executive director, talking to men, talking to women. The vast majority are women. There was probably about 3 years ago, our goddaughter's mother sent me a message on Facebook. So we're going, it's not uncommon. We're going back and forth and on the message. And she says, I need to share something with you. Okay. That your goddaughter was assaulted. And everything in me just fell. Because I'm sitting here and I'm out here helping strangers. And then someone that's close to me, I couldn't help. So I listened to her go back and forth, and I'm sitting here, for me, I'm like, why didn't you call me and talk to me? And my wife says, you got to let people communicate the way they want to.
Yeah.
So I get off the phone with her. Now I'm sitting on the floor, literally, and I'm crying. And I try to call my wife to talk to her and try to get this out. And I can't reach her. I called her like 10 times. She was in a meeting. I couldn't reach her. I call my best friend who happens to be a pastor. And I just go off. I'm like, our world is a hot mess and people are just evil. And I'm just going off on. And he says to me, let me know when you're finished. And I'm just going in. I'm getting it all out. I'm bombing on him now. And I was like, I'm finished. I'm expecting my good friend to be on my side. That's right. I understand with you. He said, well, let me ask you a couple of questions. I'm like, all right. He said, how many women have shared their story with you for the very first time and never shared it with anybody else? I'm like, decent amount. He said, how many? I said, I don't know, 30. He said, okay. He said, have any men share their story with you? I'm like, yeah. So how many? I'm like, so maybe a handful. He said, why do you think that is? I'm like, I don't know. I'm snapping at him now. He says, because you're called to do this right now. He said, people don't just open up and share some details that are rough to share with just anybody. And I'm like, all right, fine. I don't even want to talk to you anymore. I couldn't watch, hung the phone up. I was like, I was done. And I had to sit with that. And I talked about seasons of my life. And this season is about service and, you know, whatever that looks like. And, you know, I'd mostly do it through helping survivors, but also do it with mentoring some men. Mentoring some young men as well. Those are some things that are I'm passionate about. And anytime I get the chance to just hold a space with a man or a young man, there is a middle school here in Durham that is for black and brown boys. And I spend a lot of time over there just talking with them, hanging out with them, laughing. I went over there during one of their recess times and they convinced me to play basketball with them. Now, in my head, I'm still 26. Cross you over, he step back on you. I'm a spin move. Then my body said, you know, you're over 55. Slow down. And needless to say, the next morning I wake up, I'm trying to figure out why I'm so sore. Why does my back hurt? Why do my knees hurt? And my wife said, you do realize you just play basketball with the boys trying to run up and down that court. But it's just little things like that that fuel me. And, you know, a lot of times people talk about, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. And I agree. You can't pour from an empty cup. However, for me, my cup never stays empty. I might get tired. My cup never stays empty because my source is constantly pouring into me. And if my source is not pouring into me, he sends people my way that will pour into me out of the build. And a lot of people text me or call me and not knowing what I'm feeling. And then all of a sudden I'm like, getting off the phone with them, like, man, right? It's time to go run again. Time to go out there. Who's next? Who's next on that list to serve, man? But it fuels me. I talk about legacy. And a lot of times when we think of legacy, we think of somebody leaving a bunch of money and, you know, got their names on buildings and all that. So for me, legacy is, Clint, I might have helped you in some way that for me was just nothing, but it meant a lot to you. And you're a grandfather one day and you're sitting there and like, man, there was a gentleman named Ed Dudley. And Ed Dudley said this or did this. Now you just uttered my name to another generation. That's legacy. My person that poured into me, because my background, like I said, is financial service, was a little Italian guy in Boston named Bob Paolini. And Bob Paolini said, you don't belong in this department. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I worked for an institution. There were three people of color that worked there at the time. And he's like, you don't belong here. You belong in this department, which was your sales and marketing department. I'm like, wow. But it was because of what he did for me. And this is 25, 26 years ago, that because of what he did for me, my career in financial services did this. I don't know where Bob's still alive. I have not talked to him since 99. But because of him, this is part of my journey. And it all started because he told me I didn't belong here and I needed to go there. And he was my advocate. So yeah, I can rattle off a lot of different people's names. That's a legacy for me. Mm.
Man, thank you so much for sharing that. I got chills so many times hearing those stories that you were sharing. And I know there's so many people that are going to be sharing your name in the next generation. And I love how someone poured into you and you realize how that benefited you. And even in your career before more of the service, you know, that was your MO. And I have two things I want to kind of circle back and highlight. And then I've got another question for you. But the first is about your wife and what I do in my role now as a somatic coach, practitioner, if you will, which basically means I'm working with the nervous system. And what I do a lot is normalize tough stuff that's happening. And it's to the guys in the group that have experienced this, some people you just described, you know, hearing that that's normal based on the circumstance and that's not your body doing something wrong. You know, it's very appropriate and intelligent and it kept you safe, you know? And so when your wife had that shock trauma, which is the car accident, which I experienced myself, and my story is very similar. And it said it unlocked a lot of that trauma underneath. That's extremely normal, especially for someone who has early developmental trauma and they're holding it together, it looks like, on the outside. And the analogy I want to give you is it's like a duck on water, okay? Duck on water looks smooth and graceful, but underneath those legs are going crazy, okay? So that's our conditioning holding down, managing that we're likely unaware of. Sounds like your wife was aware, but some aren't. And then this big shock trauma erupts all of that. It's kind of like a big bucket of water, and that's the last drop. And so all that water comes out and that's super, super normal. Same thing with your cousin. You know, he was acting out and, you know, people are like, what's wrong with him? Well, damn, when we hear his real story and we can normalize that and say, man, that makes a lot of sense. And so the more I do this work, I find it really hard to judge someone else when you put yourself in their shoes. And it's like, I'm so sick of our society and this left, right, this label versus that right BS. We all bleed the same blood. We all got the same stuff that we're dealing with. And the more that we can normalize and humanize each other, I think the better we'll be. And I really appreciate what you're doing for these communities and turning your pain and your wife's pain into purpose, I think is beautiful. My question, so a theme that I've heard a couple of times is burnout. And I know that that's something that we see a lot of in the healing services and that you and your wife have experienced. What would you say is the role burnout plays in someone who is out there hearing these hard stories and trying to help? And how do you and your employees deal with that?
So everybody experiences burnout in time because our society is a microwave society. We want everything like this, right? It's my money. I want it now, you know, and we're constantly moving and we're not stopping. You know, they say, you know, they used to say, stop and smell the roses. We don't do that. We're not conditioned to do that. You know, you graduate either high school, trade school or college, and you work. I wish we would normalize and saying retirement age is not 59. Who came up with that? Maybe when we're retired 40, maybe we change some things, but burnout is real with our team. That is here in the office. We have a dual purpose room. The room one is for clients that don't have anywhere to a quiet space or whatever to do therapy. We'll have them, they can do therapy in that room. But most of the time is used for our team just if they've gotten off a call or they're feeling a certain way about something, go in that room, close the door and relax. Get yourself together. Ground yourself, you know, take some time to just breathe. And I don't think we have enough spaces like that. I've seen a lot of big companies now have little quiet rooms, which is great. We need to use them more. But we need to, I had to get to a point where I was building in my calendar quiet time. Because if I didn't build it into my calendar, it wasn't going to happen. And I started with, you know, 15 minutes every day, dealing with my tool. A half hour. I'm fortunate that, you know, I have the luxury that I can do that or an hour if I need to, but take time to slow down. slow down. And because if we don't, some of us, you know, if we don't slow down, we're going to end up in a grave. Yep. That's where heart attacks and stroke, because we're just constantly moving, not taking care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we say, yeah, I'm going to the gym and working out, but I know people that were in great shape and had heart attacks. You're not taking time to slow down. We need to, because, you know, I feel that everybody in society, every last person, I don't care if you're a president, I don't care if you're a janitor, we all have inherent value that we can share and up with somebody else. But if we don't slow down, we don't see the inherent value in us. And sometimes we just need to pour into others and let them know that they are of value, that they're needed, that they're loved, especially men. Especially men. Outside of our significant others, you don't hear, you know, hey, I love you, bro. I remember the first time I heard my dad say, I love you. We weren't living in the same city. I looked at my phone because I hadn't heard my dad say that as I was an adult. And I immediately called my mom and was like, Dad, okay. But I was so bad, this is to love you. Like, is he good? Like, she said, no, yeah, he's good. Your dad has changed. I was like, wow. No, but we just need to slow down. Mm-hmm. Slow down more and ground. Maybe go outside and ground yourself and breathe. Take a deep breath.
Yeah, for sure.
And breaths throughout the day are amazing.
Yeah, this is something I think about a lot, and it's a lot of what I help. So I certainly appreciate, you know, what you guys are doing. And you know, we talked a little bit of that before hopping on, encouraging employees to take time, because it's really easy. And it's been part of my personal journey of learning to rest without shaming myself, because I had that conditioning too, that, hey, you sleep when you die, you burn the candle at both ends so that you can provide and be the man and the husband and the father that you're supposed to be. And so that basically says, if I'm not doing, then I'm wrong. I'm bad. And so we may carve out that time, but are we really letting ourselves rest? And there was years over this last journey where I'm sitting on the couch, just like, you know, I got a knife in my back, I got a whip, and I'm just like beating the crap out of myself to a system that
I'm treadmill.
Yeah. Yeah. It has no ability to even needs the rest. But so what I recommend to people that are in those shoes, they're like, man, I that's me. I can't rest without shaming myself. I feel really guilty when I rest. And kind of like Ed has demonstrated here, it's the little moments. It's not these big overt expressions of rest. You don't have to go for a vacation or lay on the couch all day. Those things are nice too. But it's the little moments. It's, can you walk outside and not be in your head? And I mean, a way somebody could try that on is, can you feel your feet on the ground? Can you hear the birds singing? Can you feel the sunshine and feel the wind? And if you do all of those things, you bring your senses into the moment, you will be here now. And there will be a deep breath that comes in. Not one that you have forced or that you're performing. It's your nervous system going, oh, thank God. Because you're not projecting the worst thing onto the future and trying to control that outcome. You're not just in this hypervigilant state of doing. You're here right now. And I think that's the secret to learning to rest is learning to stop and pause and use your senses to be here in the moment, because that's all we got. We got right now, and everything else is a story that you've created.
I look at it. I was raised by I'm a Generation X. I was raised by baby boomers. Baby boomers worked till they died. Yeah. They just kept on working. And we watched them work. Like, I remember watching my dad work. My dad was blue collar, and he just worked. He worked. I remember him coming home one day and sitting in his chair, because, you know, they all had these RG bunker chairs. He sat in his chair, and he fell asleep. And my mom was looking at him. She said to me, she says, you want to be like that? What do you mean? He's worked all day long. He's had a six-day week, and he's exhausted when he gets home. I said, oh. Now, it took me some years to get out of that mindset. I mean, a lot of years that I don't have to just put 50, 60 hours a week into work and then take a vacation, but I can just sit down and relax. Now, I will admit here, I have an unhealthy obsession, but it helps with me relax. I'll get in the evening, I'll get on TikTok for a while and I'll crack up laughing because people are hilarious. I'll sit there and I'll sit there and laugh. So I'm glad they made an agreement to keep TikTok here in the States. But just finding those little times that work for you. Comedies relax me after dealing with so much people's trauma and some other things. I sit and watch comedies. And I'll sit there and I'll laugh. I don't walk as much as I used to. I need to. But when I was walking, just, you know, I used to walk and look up clouds formations. I got a bunch of pictures of clouds. And it just brought me peace. So you find out what brings you peace and do more of that. Yep. Sometimes it's maybe, you know, you take your kids, I'll let them run around and you just sit back and watch them. If it brings you peace, do more of it. Mm-hmm. That will help with any burnout that you're doing. But I wish companies and leaders really understood that more. Because it's always about the bottom line. And they're like taskmasters. You got to get this done. You got to get this project. You got to get this done. You look at a lot of these millennials. They don't stay at jobs long. They'll bounce. So like, time to go.
Yeah. And I think a big part of that is, you know, to unplug from the matrix, the programming that says I'm going to work until I die, and start listening to your body that's going to tell you, I want to move towards this. It feels safe. And I want to move away from this. It's not in alignment anymore. I think if we allowed ourselves that discernment, and that only happens when we intentionally work with and develop an awareness of our body, we don't need anybody else. What would happen if you weren't overthinking all the time, Ed?
A lot of us need to be reprogrammed. That's the reality. Because I was in that matrix because I thought I needed a lot of stuff, a lot of the material stuff, you know, cars and my things, watches, loved watches.
Yeah, I've heard you say
talking about this a little while. That was my thing. But do we really need all that stuff? Can we take it anywhere with us? You know, I'm not going to mock Jeff Bezos. He's got all the money in the world. But do you really need a $500 million yacht? Well, we're conditioned, the more stuff you have, the more valuable you are. And that's so not true. Yeah. And when we go chasing that stuff, that's where a lot of our energy goes. Oh, I'm making $100,000 now. I got to live like I'm making $150,000.
How much more rewarding is it to, you told me before, I remember we said this. Yeah, was it before? So how much more rewarding is it for you now to help someone and see them be gracious, to see that it really helped them versus getting that new watch?
They'll like watches, so don't get me wrong. I'm a window shopper now. But when someone comes to me, or I can see the look on somebody's face, like one story is there was a young lady that I don't even remember how she found us. But she was sleeping in her car with her dog due to domestic violence. She had been in her car for quite some time. Well, we started working with her. We started helping her. We went to court with her against her abuser. We helped provide cell phone for her so she can stay, because she could only use the cell phone she had when she was connected to wireless. I'm like, well, that's, you can't do that. This was a span of about 8 months that we worked with her. She got back on the other. She got on the other side. She got found a job. Went moved out of the area, and is doing phenomenal. And she simply said thank you. And it wasn't a, you know, big drawn out thing. She said thank you. You guys will never know what you've done for me, because for the day that, well, the night before she was moving, we met her and just had some ice cream. That means, don't get me wrong, I still like my watches. But to see her and hear her, the gratefulness and the thankfulness in her heart for us helping her. Can't put a price tag on it.
Yeah.
Can't put a price tag on it. I will continue to serve people until I'm no longer here. When I moved to the Carolinas, I did a lot of networking. I was going to all the networking events, all of them. Just, you know, getting my name out there because I didn't know anybody outside my parents and my siblings. But when some things started to shift on me, because I kept having so many people asking, what do you do? What do you do? What do you do for a living? What do you do with that? I personally think they were asking what I do for a living so they can size me up. Is this guy worth 5 minutes or is this guy worth 10 minutes? And it got to a point, I was at a networking event and I was just so tired of people saying that to me. And he asked me, what do you do for a living? And I turned around and said to him in the moment, I said, it's not what I do for a living, but what I do for the living. And you should have seen his face. So that's my tagline now. It's not what I do for a living, it's what I do for the living. And I will continue to do for the living as much as I possibly can. If I hit that $1 billion lottery, we would have had fun. Now, I would have had a couple watches, but we got a homeless problem out here that we can solve. We just don't have the heart to solve it as a society. I would have done something like that, built some houses. Or, you know, we got all these containers that you build container homes. I would have done something like that. But more importantly, just, hey, what do you need? How can I serve you today? And that's what it's, that's at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. I remember when we were starting the men's, going a couple sessions with the men's group. You remember the 3-2-1?
Oh, yeah.
So we had this thing, it was 3-2-1. And it's like, you know, you wake up, what are the three things that you're thankful for? It caused you to pause for a minute. And then it gets to the two. It was, you know, who are you going to, you know, pray for, serve, or, you know, or whatever it was. And then that last one is, you know, what was the last one? One action, one person think
about, pray for, help today.
Yeah. So that right there, that alone will make you have a grateful heart. That alone. Because a lot of times guys will say, I'm thankful for this car. I'm thankful for this watch. A lot of times we're thankful for just the little things. I see people that, like, I'm going to be real. I got sciatica right here. I don't wish that on my enemy. But I wake up and I'm like, I'm thankful I can still feel.
Yeah.
I'm thankful that I can still walk. Though, you know, pain hits sometimes. I'm thankful for the air in my body. And then I get to the, you know, some days I might say that I'm thankful for a roof over my head. I'm thankful for food to eat. But how much stuff do we really need? You know?
Man, I think my takeaway from the day, the thing that I wrote down, circled, and then I would encourage everybody else, it's your homework if you're listening. You know, how can we be a little bit more understanding and accepting of where people are at? And how can we engage with more random acts of kindness for the when we slow down a little bit, we see other people that are in need. How can we walk them to their car when they're in their storm, right? So we've all been there. Ed, I just want to thank you for coming on, man, and what you do for the living. I love your story. I knew this was going to be a good one.
You know, Michelle, when you call.
Huh?
You know, Michelle, when you call.
Oh, yeah. I know you will. I think a lot of people know that about you. But yeah, I really appreciate what you're doing for the living, what you're doing, what you turned your pain into purpose and helping other people and, you know, acts of service being your thing. I think it's amazing. To kind of wrap things up, and thank you so much for everything you shared. Tell us, you know, what's going on with, I've got three pages of notes here. I can't even find your the Shining Light and Darkness. Your nonprofit. Like, do you guys have anything coming up? Is there anything you want to share with the audience? This should be airing first week in November.
November?
Yep.
Okay. So in November, first week of November.
Oh, shoot. I mean, October, brother. It's September. October.
Okay. So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And I'm going to put a challenge out there to men, and men in particular. I want you to go speak to a woman in your life that you love, care about, who can be your significant other, sister, mother, and ask them what's their experience with domestic violence or sexual assault. While they may not personally have an experience, by guarantee, without a shadow of a doubt, they know someone that has. We need to bring more awareness. We need more men standing up. We don't need more men allies. We need more men advocates that are holding other men accountable for some of the actions that they're doing. We've all been there as men. We've all heard the conversation. We've probably been part of that conversation. But let's do better. Let's do better, not just for us, but for our sons and nephews that are coming up. And but more importantly, for the women in our lives that we love, and then the ones that are coming up in the society. Because the society, we don't live in a broken society. We have broken people that need support. Because we need some of our broken people together to get the support that they need. Sometimes it's just holding a space for a conversation. So we'll be around speaking and at a lot of different places. The first Friday of October at 6 o'clock, and at the Apex Senior Center, we'll be holding what we call our Glow of Grace. It is a vigil for individuals that are in North Carolina that have lost their lives to domestic violence. One big event that we're throwing, it's not in October, it's going to be on November 1st. We're going to have an oyster roast. We have a oyster farmer from the coast of North Carolina bringing us live oysters. We have a celebrity chef named Stephen Beatty coming out of South Carolina. This gentleman is one on the Food Network. He's medaled in the Culinary Olympics, and I didn't even know there was a Culinary Olympics. What? He's coming from South Carolina. We have a few other chefs coming from out of town. I believe we have one coming from Atlanta. And these guys are just coming to have a good time, to feed people some good food, but most importantly, raise some funds and bring some awareness to some of the issues that are going on.
I love it, man. If you'll give me the links to those, we'll put them in the show notes and make sure everybody knows about that. I'm certainly excited about some oysters. I wasn't able to make the original event. That's a whole nother story, but I am excited that I'm going to get to come this time. So, Ed, thank you so much, brother. Go ahead.
No, I'm going to say get you some good oysters. And if you like hot sauce, bring your favorite hot sauce, because we may not have it. But no, but I appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I've listened to you and I watched you pour into people some things that we didn't even think about in so many different ways. So you continue the good work that you're doing. It's making a difference.
It researches. What I'm realizing, and this is why I kind of blanked a minute when I was doing my thank yous, you know, as we're talking, I had to thank you for this journey. I wouldn't be here if we hadn't done the Men on a Journey thing, and I didn't try to help the guys with nutritional deficiencies and get to see my own stuff that I think we all have. So, you know, thank you for being you and always being of service. You changed my life, and it's been great hearing your story as why. And, you know, I got your back no matter what, dude.
Yeah, appreciate you.
You bet, brother.